Good morning. All right, so we'll say good morning. Let's begin. So we're picking up today. We have a lot to do today. We're actually picking up at the new parak. Today's daf is Mem Hey 45. We are picking up at daf Mem Dalet Amud Beis 44b with the new Mishnah, the new parak. Egla Arufa. So Egla Arufa, remember, is the decapitated calf. So just by way of introduction, Torah tells us that if you find a, just to give you a very short introduction, Torah tells us that if you find a corpse in between two cities, an individual has been murdered. So the halacha is we measure the closest city to the corpse, and the members of that city, the elders of that city, come and they bring a young calf, they decapitate the calf, and they wash their hands over the calf, saying, Yadenu lo shafchu damzeh, our hands have not spilled this particular blood. So remember, so that's the process that the Mishnah here is describing. So Egla Rufa, the process of Egla Rufa, Balashna Kodesh, is recited in Hebrew. Shena Emar, Ki Matzei Chalol Ba'adama, when you will find the corpse in the ground, Ve'yatzu V'yinecha V'shoftecha. And the elders and the judges will go out. So the Mishnah describes here the process. Shlosha Mibeis Din Agadosh B'Yushalayim Hayu Yotzim. Three members of the High Court in Yerushalayim. This is what we call the Sanhedrin HaGadol. Sanhedrin HaGadol is comprised of 71 judges. So three of those judges would come down from Yerushalayim to oversee this process. Rabbi Yehuda said, no, it's not three, but rather Chamisha. It's actually five judges. Shne'emar, Zikeinecha Shnayim, because Zikeinecha is two. Shoftecha is Shnayim. Shoftecha is two. The Ein Beis Din Shakel, and there is no such thing as an even Beis Din. Therefore, again, if Zekeinecha is two and Shoftecha is two, that gives me four, but I can't have a Beis Din of four. So instead, again, we add a fifth. So the Gemara goes, the Mishnah goes right there. Nimtza Tamun Begal, O B'Tavli B'Ilan Otzaf Al Pnei Amayim. If the body was found buried under a pile of rubble, or it was found hanging from a tree, or floating on top of the water, Lo hayu arfin. In that case, again, they would not do the Egla Arufa. There's no process of Egla Arufa in that case. Shine Emar Ba'adama. Because the Pasuk says you found the corpse in the ground, below Tamun Bagal, and not hidden under a pile. No fell, it's fallen on the ground, below Taloi Be'ilan, and not hanging from a tree. Basada, you find it in the field, the Torah says, below Tsaf Al Panei Hamayim, and that's floating on top of the water. Nimtzas. I'm sorry?
They didn't have to do it in a certain number of days.
It's as soon as you can. There's an immediacy, absolutely, as soon as you can. If you find the body near the border of Eretz Yisrael, or in close proximity to a city where the majority are idolaters, or you find it in proximity to a city that does not have its own Beis Din, lo hayu arfin, they would not undergo this process of Egla Arufa. In Modedin Elamit Yesh Yishba Bezdin. And they would not go ahead and measure only to a city. They always said differently. They only measured proximity to a city that had its own Bezdin. Okay, we'll explain all of these exemptions. Says the Gemara, my Kamer. We'll say the Gemara asks, what is the Mishnah saying? The Mishnah began with the statement that Egla Arufa must be recited in Lashon HaKodesh. So the Gemara says, what's the nature of that teaching? Am Rabbi Aval Hachi Kamer. This is what it means to say. Shene Amar Va'anu Va'amru. The Pasuk by Egla Arufa says, Va'anu va'amru, they will recite out loud, U'lahalanhu omer, va'anu alavim va'amru. And later on, by Brachas and Klavos, by Hagrizim and Har Eval, it says that the Levim will go ahead, va'anu va'amru. So the Gemara says, Ma'aniyah ha'amur la'alan balashna kodesh, just like anu va'amru by the Levim, by the Brachos and Klavos, was Hebrew, afkan balashna kodesh, so to by Egla Arufa, it also was done in Hebrew. V'seder Egla Arufa Ketzad. I'm sorry. V'seder Egla Arufa Ketzad. Ki matze chala ba'adama v'yatzu zekeinecha v'shoftecha shlosh shemi beizin agadol b'shibishalayim hayu yotzin. Rav Yehuda omer chamisha. So the next machlokis recorded in the Mishnah was everyone agrees that this process is overseen by the High Court in Yerushalayim. The shayla is how many people from the High Court have to come down. So first the opinion of the Mishnah said that you require three. Rabbi Huda said that you require five. So Tan Rabbanan. So we'll say now the Gemara is going to go into this machlokes. So we learn Tan Rabbanan. V'yatzu zikinecha v'shoftecha. The pasuk says that the elders and the judges shall come out. So the Gemara says zikinecha shnayim v'shoftecha shnayim. So zikinecha, your elders, refers to two judges. Shoftecha refers to two judges. Ve'in beizdin shakol. I mean, you can't have an even beizdin. Therefore, what? Mosifin alein od echad. Harikan chamishu de Rabbi Yehuda. Therefore, I will say, if zekenecha represents two, shoftecha represents two, that's four. You can't have an even numbered beizdin. Therefore, you add on one more, comprising a beizdin of five. These are the words of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon says, no, zekenecha shnayim. Rabbi Shimon says, zekenecha means two. They ain't based in shakal. You can't have a based in made up of just two people. You add on one more person, that gives you three. So what does Rabbi Shimon do with the fact that it says shoftecha? Why doesn't that equal another two judges? The word shoftecha teaches us that you have to bring not just any judges, but rather, again, the best of the judges. I, Rabbi Huda, mizikne zikene kanafka. Rabbi Huda learns that these judges must be misyon, must be distinguished from, instead of saying zikne, it says zikenecha, your elders. Rabbi Shimon, ikasiv rachmana zikne, hava amina afilo zikne ashok. Rabbi Shimon says, no, the Torah to write zikenecha for another reason. Because had it just written zikne, I would have thought that just applies to some old guys from the marketplace. Therefore, kasiv rachmana zikenecha. Therefore, the pasuk says, "Zikenecha, your elders, v'ikasev rachmona zikenecha." And had the pasuk just said, "Zikenecha, hava mina filu Sanhedrin ketano," I might have thought that this even refers to Sanhedrin katan. I will say the Sanhedrin katan was a Sanhedrin comprised of 23 judges. So I might have thought that you could even take some members of the Sanhedrin katan and go ahead and use them for this process. Kasev rachmona v'shoftecha. Therefore, the pasuk says, "Your judges, l'miyuchadin shebishoftecha, the best of your judges." Rabbi Huda Gamar zikne mi zikne ha'ida. On the other hand, Rabbi Huda learns that zikne from zikne ha'ida. So the Gemara says, So this is talking about again in the situation where the Sanhedrin issues an erroneous ruling, and the Torah describes the karban that is brought by the members of the Sanhedrin. So just like zikne ha'ida there, but in the karbanic sense, the karbanic context refers to the members of the high court, the zikne Sanhedrin. So too over here, by egla ruf, it also means the zikne Sanhedrin. Afkam yuchad shebi eida. To which the Gemara says, 1 second. Igamar ligmara lekula milsa mehasam. But now that you're saying that this is gzer shava, then you don't have to darshan zikne necha and shoftecha at all. To which the Gemara says, zikinecha v'shoftecha lamali. So why do I even need to discuss zikinecha v'shoftecha? Ela vav v'shoftecha l'minyana. Rather, again, the vav in shoftecha tells me that what? Tells me that there's an added number of judges necessary for this situation. Rabbi Shimon, type of memhei. Rabbi Shimon, vav l'mashma. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon doesn't darshin the vav. If that's the case, when the pasuk says that two will go out and measure, so the Gemara says, but rather, if that's the case, that every single time in the context of Para Aduma, we see a plural lashon, then the Maaseh, that always means two, then Rabbi say, watch this, Zikenecha is two, Shoftecha is two, Yatsu is two, and Madadu is two. Hare kan tisha. Now again, that actually gives us eight. But remember, as we've already established, that what? You can't have a based in shakel, and therefore can't have a based of an even number, and therefore again, that translates into nine people. To which the Gemara says, Hare kan tisha, Rabbi Shimon, and according to Rabbi Shimon, Hare kan shiva, then you'll get seven judges. Hahumi boyle the chidisanyan. No, we need that for a different drasha. The yatsu, when it says they will go out, that teaches us, Hein velo shluchav. That teaches us that it's only the members of the Beis Din that have the ability to do this, and they cannot dispatch messengers or emissaries to do their work. Umadadu, they shall measure. Shafilu nimtza ba'alil yir hayu modadin shemitzva la'asog medida. Was an interesting halacha that the umadadu means they measure, that even if it's clear that the body is in close proximity to one of the cities over the other, there is still a mitzvah to measure. This is very interesting because we would have thought that the concept of measuring is in a circumstance, in a situation, where it's not clear which city the body is close to. Kamash malanu madadu means that lamaisi you have to measure, even if it's clear to the eye, there is still a mitzvah to measure. Mas nisin delok Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So our Mishnah does not reflect the Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. How so? The son your Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, Omer, zikeinecha zu Sanhedrin. When it says your elders, this refers to the Sanhedrin. Shoftecha. Oh, ze melech v'kohen gadol. So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov has an amazing sheet. He says, shoftecha means the king and the Kohen Gadol. In other words, can you imagine this? Both of those individuals must attend this ceremony, this process of Egla Arufa, which is amazingly dramatic. You're talking about the two highest ranking officials in that. It just shows you, by the way, how seriously the Torah is taking a loss of life. It also tells you, Baruch Hashem, how infrequent these things must have been, according to Rabbi Yaakov at least. Because otherwise, can you imagine if the Melech or the Kohen Gadol will have to do this every single day? It's wild. So the Gemara says, Melech Tichsiv, Uharvan the Chov Techam, he's Melech and Kohen. Kohen Gadol, Melech Tichsiv, Melech B'Mishpat Yamid Eretz, Melech B'Mishpat Yamid Eretz. So you see again, the Lashon of Mishpat is used by the Melech. Therefore, Chov Techam refers to Melech. Kohen Gadol Tichsiv, Ubasa El Akonim Halavim Vela Shofet. So the pasuk again groups the Kohanim together with the Shoftim, and therefore Shoftecha Dafka refers to Kohen Gadol in this context. Ibailu. So we'll say the Gemara's the following kasha. So remember, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is one who paskins that Shoftecha means Melech and Kohen. Now the Gemara asks, Ibailu, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, the Melech the Kohen Gadol who depligi avab Sanhedri. So we'll say now, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. What's his shita? Is he just saying that Shoftecha includes the fact that I need the Melech and the Kohen to come? But in terms of the numbers of the members of Sanhedrin that have to come, is it that he subscribes to one of the previously established shitos, either like Rabbi Yehuda, that you need 5, or like Rabbi Shimon, that you need 3? O Dilma, b'Sanhedrin nami pligi, ad di ika kula Sanhedrin. Or does Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov argue by the number of the judges from the Sanhedrin you have to have as well? And perhaps he holds, and this would be quite dramatic, that you need all of the members of the Sanhedrin to attend this Egla Arufa process in order for it to be valid. Amar Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef says, let's learn this from a braisa. Tashma, Matzan Zakin Mamre Abe Pagi. Vehimra Leim. We'll say, so the Gemara introduces us to another concept called the Zakin Mamre. Zakin Mamre is an older sage who disagrees with the ruling of the majority of his rabbinic peers and refuses to yield to the majority. This is called the Zakin Mamre. So that Zakin Mamre, ultimately, if he refuses to yield to the majority, is executed. And again, he's viewed as one of those individuals who represents a societal threat. So let's say the following situation. Let's say the Zakin Mamre finds the Sanhedrin Abipagi. We'll say Abipagi, Rashi points out, is just a descriptive term for anywhere outside of the Lishkas HaGozes. Remember again, the Sanhedrin used to sit in the chamber of hewn stone in the Beis HaMikdash. I bless you. Abipagi means that the Sanhedrin is outside of the Beis HaMikdash, the Harabayis compound, still within Yerushalayim, but outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So let's say again, the Zakin Mamre runs into the Sanhedrin Abipagi, and he rebels against their ruling. So he's not rebelling against the ruling while they're sitting in the chamber of hewn stone, the Lishkas HaGozes, but rather outside of it. What's the halacha? Yachol tehi amra asa amra. I might have thought that his rebellion is considered to be a rebellion. Talmud lomar v'kamta v'alisa el ha-makom. Therefore, the pasuk says, "You shall get up and you shall go up to the place." Melamed shamakom gorim, to teach us that what it is the place that caused. We'll say, interestingly enough, it is the place that vests the Sanhedrin with power, which is quite interesting. So the Gemara is teaching us, just an aside, the Sanhedrin can't paskin or adjudicate major issues outside of the Lishkas HaGozes. Similarly, if the Zakin Mamre meets the Sanhedrin, you know, on Ben Yehuda, so at the end of the day, and he rebels against their ruling there, that is not considered to be a Zakin Mamre. It's only considered to be a Zakin Mamre if he rebels against them when they're in the Lishkas HaGozes. So the Gemara asks, by the way, the Gemara says, the nafakama, how many people, now when we talk about the Sanhedrin being found outside of Lishkas HaGozes in Yerushalayim, how many members of the Sanhedrin left the Lishkas HaGozes? Ilema the nafak mitzasan, tamaharachtika gavai kavase svirlehu. See if only part of the Sanhedrin left. So let's say half of them are inside the Lishkas HaGozes, half of them left. Maybe the ones who are inside the Lishkas HaGozes would agree with this Zakin Mamre. In which case, again, then what? He's not a Zakin Mamre. Rather, it must be that the entire Sanhedrin left Lishkas HaGozes and is now somewhere in Yerushalayim. Now, why would they leave Lishkas HaGozes? If it's to attend to their own needs, are they permitted to leave Lishkas HaGozes? So the pasuk says over here, quoting from Shir HaShirim, that ultimately the officers have to remain again in the compound. Shem nitzrach echad mehem lases. Imisham esrim ushlosha kenegas Sanhedrin ketana yotze. Ve'im lav ino yotze. We'll say this teaches us that if one of the members of the Sanhedrin wants to leave the lishkas agosis, he can do so as long as what? As long as there are 23 members of the Sanhedrin still remaining inside. Then one of them could leave. But assuming that is not the case, then none of them could leave. Let's take a quick look at Rashi just a moment. Rashi says, Sira Recha, Zes Sanhedrin. This refers to the Sanhedrin. She Yoshin Biti Burash Eretz Yisrael, who sit in the middle of Eretz Yisrael. Agana Sahar, Sha'osin Kechatzi Levana Agul Bishras Yeshivasan, Kadeshi E Kulan Roin Zazaz. So also Agana Zahar, it sounds like literally the Gemara is saying they are like the garden of the moon. That just like the moon has a crescent shape, so to the Sanhedrin Agada, when they would sit like in a U, in a crescent shape as well. Just one last Rashi. Hamezeg, Kashir Mezeg, Shnei Chalokim Mayim, Ve'echad Yayin, Afkan Zar Sheish Darish Lish. Well, so just like again, Mezeg, the way they would make wine was two parts water, one part wine. So to again, if one third of the Sanhedrin remains behind, in this case 23 judges, ultimately again they are permitted to go ahead, and then one of them is permitted to leave. So the Gemara says Lamai. So therefore, if you have a situation where the entire Sanhedrin is leaving, why would they be leaving? Lav lemedidas egla. It must be that why are they leaving? For the egla arufa, to measure ultimately the distance of the body. And what do you see from here? Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and this is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So we'll say, you see from here that what? Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov argues in Rabbi Huda Rabbi Shimon on two counts. First of all, again, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov holds that the Melech and the Kohen Gadol must attend the Egla Arufa. That's number one. And number two, whereas Rabbi Huda holds that you need five members of the Sanhedrin, Rabbi Shimon needs that you need three members of the Sanhedrin, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov seems to hold that what? You need all of the members of the Sanhedrin. Quite a dramatic statement. So Amar le Abaye, lo, Abaye said, maybe not. Dilma la hosef ala irva ala azaros, maybe not. Maybe the reason why you would have a situation where all the members of the Sanhedrin would leave the Sanhedrin is in order to add onto the courtyards and the city of Yerushalayim. In other words, what happens if you want to increase the municipal borders of Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh? So there is a way to do that. That process requires the participation of the Sanhedrin. Kedisnan, as we learned, you can't add on to the city or to the courtyards without the Sanhedrin. This is Tanya Kavasi de Rav Yosef. So we have a brace that supports Rav Yosef. If the Zakin Mamre found the Beis Din outside of the Beis HaMikdash but in Yerushalayim, and he rebelled against their ruling, Kigon, Sheyatsu Lemedidas Egla, and says the Braisa, why would the Sanhedrin be leaving the Sanhedrin compound in order to either go ahead and participate in the Egla Arufo or to add on to the municipal borders of Yerushalayim? Yachote Amra Aso Hamra. I might have thought that his rebellion would be a valid rebellion. Tamud Lomar, they come to Vali. So therefore the Pasuk says, you shall get up and you shall go, you shall ascend. Melamed Shamakam Gorm. It teaches us that what? That it is the place that ultimately causes. So we'll say, therefore, again, first of all, halacha lemaisa, the Gemara teaches us that it is the makom, it is the lishkas hagazis that vests the Sanhedrin with their Sanhedrin identity. That's number one. Number two, zakin mamre only takes place where? Within the lishkas hagazis as well. And I will say, the third point to ponder, which again is the Rambam over here, which I'll just quote to you. Sorry. The Rambam says, let me just quote to you this Rambam. So the Rambam in Hilchos Rotzeach Ushmiras HaNefesh, Perek Tes, Halacha Aleph, how do we pass going in? Now we have three machlokas. Rabbi Huda saying you need five members of the Sanhedrin. Rabbi Shimon saying you need three members of the Sanhedrin. Rabbi Zabi Yaakov seeming to say you need all the members of the Sanhedrin. So writes the Rambam. The Rambam writes, V'yotzin chamisha zekenim ibezin agadosh u'shalayim. So we send five members of the Sanhedrin agadol. And what happens? Umodidin mimeno ala arim shasivov zachalal. So the Rambam passing is like Rabbi Huda, namely that you have the part for Egla Arufa, there are five members of the Sanhedrin who ultimately come, Sanhedrin Agad, who come to participate in the Egla Arufa process. Nimtza tamun begal otali bi'ilan. Remember the Mishnah said, if you find the body literally either hidden under a pile or hanging from a tree, it is not subject to the egla rufa process. Leim masis and Rabbi Yehuda v'lo Rabbanon. Say that I'm sure plexi v'Rabbi Yehuda not the Rabbanon. The sanya v'shachachta omer basada. The pasuk says if you forget an omer, you forget a sheaf in the field. So prat l'tamun. So we'll say, so this is talking about shichacha, right? So shichacha, I left. I'm bundling my grain. I leave behind the bundle. So the halacha is I have to leave it for the poor, leave it for the aniyim. So the Gemara says prat l'tamun. This comes to exclude a hidden pile. In other words, again, if something was hidden, then l'maisa again, it's not subject to the laws of shichacha. These words, Rabbi Yehuda. The Chum say basada. What does the word basada come to teach me? The rabbi says atamun. It's interesting if the Chum say no, that basada doesn't come to exclude a hidden pile, but rather it comes to include a hidden pile. Amarav, afil tim rabban. So therefore again, the Gemara is suggesting over here that our Mishnah that says that if a body was hidden in a pile of rubble is not subject to the laws of Egla Arufa, would seem to go according to Rabbi Yehuda, who exempts, let's say, a hidden sheaf from shichacha, and not like the Chacham who hold that something hidden is subject to shichacha. So Amar Rav, Rav said, "Afil tim rabbanon." No, our Mishnah could even reflect the view of the rabbanon. How so? So each one we have to look at in context. Dichsiv ki matzei chala heichad dimishkachach ba'adama. So we'll say, because the pasuk Egla Rufa says, when you find a body, where would you normally find a body? On the ground. So what is it saying? Talking about a body that's exposed. Prat l'tamun. It's coming to exclude ultimately a body that is obscured or hidden by rubble. V'hasem minyan adikra. So too by shechol. So we have to look at the context of the pasuk. Dichsiv ki siktzar ketzir chabasada v'shachach to omer. When you will go ahead and harvest your field, and you will forget a bundle or a sheaf in the field, shechacha dum yedekatzir. So the shechacha, that which you leave behind, has to be similar to that which you harvest. Ma katzir begalui, just like you're harvesting that which is revealed and seen. Av shechacha begalui. So to that which you forget is also only subject to shechacha if it's revealed and seen. Cost of Rahmana Basada, therefore the Pasuk uses the actual Basada, Lirabos es Hatamun, to go ahead and teach me that even if the pile is hidden, or even if the bundle, the sheaf is hidden, it is still subject to the laws of Shechacha. So the Gemara goes back to Rabbi Yehuda, Nami Tepuklei. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, why don't we also learn this out? Mishechacha Dumya Dekatsir. Why doesn't Rabbi Yehuda make this same limud of comparing Shechacha, that which you forget, to that which you harvest? Einachinami, the Gemara says, you're right, Ve'ela. Basada lamali. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, why do you need the word basada? Mi bayle the rabbos shichachos kama. Come to teach me the idea that Rabbi say if you leave standing grain. Let's say again, say the classic cases of lekach shichacha is where I'm leaving behind or I'm dropping things that have already been harvested. Let's say I actually forget to harvest something. So the Gemara says, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that basada comes to teach me that even if I left behind standing grain, halacha lemaisa again. Halacha lemaisa, that would be subject to the laws of shichacha. But Rabbana shichachas kama minaluhu. Where did the Rabbana learn out the law of shichachas kama? Nafka luhu michitiktzar ketzircha besadcha. Excuse me. They learn out from the double lashon of siktzar ketzircha. Rabbi Huda mi boy le lechud Rabbi Avo. Rabbi Huda needs that drasha for a different reason. So the Gemara says, Dam Rabbi Avo, Am Rabbi Lazar. Prat l'shet safu omrim l'soch sadei chavero. This is an interesting case. Rabbi Elazar says, I should say, Rabbi Yehuda learns in the name of Rabbi Elazar, that this comes to exclude a case of where literally the grain floated into the field of my friend. Elazar will say, the case over here is, I cut grain, I forgot it in the field, a wind took that grain and deposited that grain in my friend's field. Rabbi Yehuda is telling us now that halacha lemaisa, that grain that's left behind now in someone else's field is not subject to the laws of shechacha. V'Rabbanan, where did Rabbanan learn this out from? Mi basada besadcha. V'Rabbi Yehuda, basada besadcha l'mashmalu. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't that make this drasha? So Rabbi Yirmiyah, bosena another shayla. So tzafu omrim l'soch sadehu. Bosena, this is a different case. Let's say over here, I have grain. I have stalks of grain that I harvested and I forgot. I left them behind. And then a wind picked it up, and a wind lifted it up and deposited on something else in my field. So let's say I have a pillar the wind picked up the grain and deposited it on the pillar. The idea over here is that the grain is no longer resting on the ground. It's no longer, the question is it's no longer basada. It's no longer on the ground. It's resting on top of something else. So mahu, what is the halacha concerning that grain? In other words, is that grain still subject to the laws of shichacha? Remember again, shichacha rabosai means that if you go ahead and you leave behind the bundle of grain when harvesting your field, that halacha lemaisi, you leave that you go ahead and you leave that bundle there and you do not take it. It's not yours, right? You don't take it. So shaila is now, the wind lifted it up, deposited it on something in my field. Halacha lemaisa, what's the status of that? Mahu, avir sadeh kisadeh dami. Do we say that the airspace of a field is like the field itself? Olav kisadeh dami. Or do we say, no, the airspace is not like the field, and therefore what? And therefore lemaisa, again, it's no longer subject to laws of shichacha. Amrav Kana l'Rav Papi, Varmalei Rav Kana l'Rav Zvid, Tivshol le'bid Rabbi Avo, less than the Sefer Rabbi Avo, Amrav Elazar, Damar, Prat l'shet safu, Omrim l'soch sadeh chaveiro. Suppose let's learn the Sefer, what we just said before. We just excluded the case of where my grain blows from my field into my friend's field, that it's not subject to the laws of shechacha. So the Gemara says, dechaveiro in l'soch sadeh ulo. It would appear that the exemption only applies because it's my friend's field. But if the grain blew in my own field and rested on top of a pillar, that l'maisa would still be subject to the laws of shechacha. To which the Gemara says, ulatamech l'soch sadeh chaveiro tzafu in munachin lo. So we'll say, but again, using that same logic, I could say the only time it's exempt in my friend's field is if it blows, let's say, onto some object in his field. But lamaisa, if it came to rest on the ground of his field, it sounds like I'm chayiv in shechacha, to which the Gemara says, v'haba inan besadcha v'leka. But how could that be? Because we require, in order for grain or produce to be subject to shechacha, it has to be besadcha, it has to be in your field. Rather, I will say, if my grain blows into my friend's field, whether that grain is resting on the ground of my friend's field or an object in my friend's field, it is not subject to shechacha. Va'afilu munachin. Even if it's resting on the ground, behind the kamar tzafu, ella bitzafu, and the only reason it said safu, that it floated in, is because there is no way for my grain to get from my field to my friend's field without what? Without it being blown there. Tashma. So we'll say, so far the way the Gemara is holding is like this, is any time my grain blows into my friend's field, whether it rests on the ground of my friend's field or it's resting on an object, it will not be subject to the laws of shechacha. That's what the Gemara seems to be saying right now. We have not yet resolved, in my own field, if the wind lifts up my grain and deposits it on an object, so is the grain subject to shechacha or not? So tashma, omer sheikh sikbo l'holi choli ir. So I'll say, if you went ahead, this is actually very interesting, if you took hold of a sheaf in order to go out and take it to the city, v'nicha gabi chaveiro, and then I put one sheaf on top of the other, v'shachacho, and I forgot them both. Right, I forgot them both in the field. So what's the halacha? Hatachton shechacha, v'alyon eno shechacha. The top sheaf is shechacha, the bottom one is not. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, Omer Shimon, Yehuda says, Nehru Shimon, shnehem enon shechacha. Neither of them are shechacha. Why? Hatachton mitnei shu tamon. So the bottom sheaf is not shechacha. Why? Because it's hidden. It's hidden. And we spoke about before that lamais, at least according to some, hidden grain is not subject to shechacha. Va'elyon mitnei shu tzaf. And the upper sheaf is not subject to the laws of shechacha. Why? Because it was a literally tzaf, you know, means floating. That's the lashon that's used for any time that the sheaf is not at rest on the ground, but is on top of something else. A very interesting shita. So bottom sheaf is exempt because its tamon is hidden. Upper sheaf is exempt because it's not resting on the ground. So the Gemara says, ad kan lo pligi ela b'tachton. So up until now, the argument is only on the bottom sheaf. But everybody seems to agree that the upper sheaf is not shechacha. Why? So because it is tzaf. Because it's not at rest on the ground. It's floating on top of something. So what do you see from here? You see from here that lamaisa, even if something is in my own field, but it's not at rest on the ground, that halacha lamaisa, what, it's not subject to shechacha? To which the Gemara says, shiny hasam, kevan da'achzik be'zachabe. To which the Gemara says, that case is different. Why? Because since you've already gone ahead and taken hold of the sheaf, you've already acquired it. Ihachi, ma'ir ya'gabi chadero. Afilu besadet nami. So you're about to say, see, in that case over here, the Gemara is saying is, it has nothing to do with tzah. It has to do with the fact that the laws of shechacha and peah, the laws of shechacha, is where you did not yet take possession of something. But if you already took possession of the sheaf and then you forgot it behind, then halacha lemaisa, that is no longer shechacha. You've already established your ownership over that sheaf. That's why, remember the case over here is, I picked up the sheaf in order to take it home, and then I forgot it. So since I've already picked it up, again, I've established ownership. That's why it's not subject to shechacha. I'm sorry?
It should be in the tachton too, you picked it up.
No, so if you notice again, the Mishnah, the Gemara did not say that case of the tachton. The Mishnah did not say, Mishnah only said, I picked up the upper one. Right, so once I picked up the upper one that I required, the bottom one was one that was in the field, correct. So that could be still subject to Talmud. So the Gemara says, Shiny, that's fine. Ihachi, if that's the case, my ira gabi chavera filo besadinami. So if that's the case, that the reason the upper sheaf is exempt from shechachas because essentially you've exercised ownership over it already, so why do you have to set this up as a case of where the upper sheaf is resting on the lower sheaf? In other words, technically speaking, even if the upper sheaf is actually sitting on the field, on the ground, it's still not subject to shechacha because you've exercised your ownership over it. To which the Gemara says, "You're right, ein achinami v'hai diktoni agabi chaveiro mishum tachton." You're right, and the reason, ultimately, again, why it used this case of putting the upper sheaf on top of the lower sheaf is mishum tachton, is in order to teach us about the exemption of the bottom sheaf, that it's exempted because of tamun. I v'hai mipnei shud safkamer. But the Braisa said that the upper sheaf is exempted from shechacha because it's floating. It doesn't say because I acquired it. Ema mipnei shehu kitzaf. Say because it's like it's floating. In other words, it's exempt like something that is tzaf, even though the reason for the exemption here is not because of tzaf, but rather because you've exercised your ownership over it. Amar Abaye. Abaye said, Harini keben azai b'shuk tveriyah. So also this is interesting. So Abaye said, I'm feeling like Ben Azai in the Shuk of Tveria. Well, so now what does that mean? If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says it's in the left-hand column. Rashi says towards the bottom. Hareini keben Azai b'shuk of Tveria. Yom echad hayadaito tzluya. Amar hareini kan pebomudiza. Mucha mahashiv davar lishol ba'omik b'charifas keben Azai shayacharif v'dorish b'shuk of Tveria. So Ben Azai was known that there were days when he felt that he possessed a special level of mental clarity. He would walk into the marketplace and essentially say, you know, bring it on. You know, whoever has a question, I'm ready to answer. And they used to like bombard him with questions in the middle of the shuk. So Abaye is saying, today I feel a sense of mental clarity like Ben Azai was, like Ben Azai possessed in the shuk. If anyone has any questions, please come and ask me. So what happens? So the Gemara says, Amar Lehu Rabban Abaye. So one of the rabbis said to Abaye the following, Shnei Chalalim Zal Gabi Zeh. Let's say you have two corpses, one on top of the other. Meheichan Hu Modeid. Where do you measure from? Right. So, where, from which part? It's two questions. Meaning, which body do you measure from? And we'll see which part of the body do you measure from. So, first of all, says the Gemara, min b'mino havi tamun, or min b'mino lo havi tzaf. So we'll say, so remember, this is dependent on two questions. Remember, two bodies means min b'mino, two of the same items. So, do we say two of the same items, the upper body still considered to be like hiding, so to speak, the bottom body, and therefore the bottom body is tamun. It's hidden and therefore not subject to the laws of Egla Arufa. Therefore, we'll only measure from the top body. And do we also say, min b'min ala havitzaf, that ultimately, again, when you have two like items, so the item on top is not considered to be floating, but rather is considered to be like it's laying on the ground. And therefore, again, ume elyon modid, in which case we would measure from the upper body. O dilma min b'min ala havitzaf, or maybe we'll say no, that even when you have two like items, the upper item is still considered to be floating, meaning not at rest on the ground. And b'min b'mino lo havi tamun, and again, and maybe we'll say that min b'mino of two like items, so then the upper item is not considered to be hiding the bottom one. The bottom one is not considered to be hidden, and therefore again, umitachton modet, and therefore according to that logic, I should measure from the bottom body. Ol dilma, min b'mino havi tamun, min b'mino havi tzaf, umitachton modet, or the third possibility is what Rabbo say, that ultimately again, even when you have two like items, the bottom item is considered to be hidden, and also when you have two like items, the upper item is considered to be not at rest on the ground, in which case what? Both bodies are not subject to the din of Egla Ruf, and there's no measuring at all. Amrlei, Tinisua said, oh, we learned this. What did we learn? So the Gemara says like this, Omer shehechzik bo l'holi choli ir. So the Gemara says that if you have an Omer, if you have a sheaf that a person picked up to acquire in order to take it to the city, v'nicha gabi chaveiro, and I put it on top of the other sheaf, v'shachacho atachto, and v'shachacho, and then I forgot it there. So this is the case we mentioned before. I picked up a sheaf to go ahead and take it home, and I put it on top of another sheaf, and I forgot both sheaves there. So atachton shechacho, the bottom sheaf is considered to be shechacha. Va'elyon eino shechacha, but the upper sheaf is not considered to be shechacha. Rabbi Shimon Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Shimon Yehuda says, in the name of Rabbi Shimon, shnehan eino shechacha. Neither of them are shechacha. Why not? Hatachton mipnei shut tamun. So the bottom one because it's hidden. Va'elyon mipnei shut saf, and the upper one because it's floating. It's not at rest. Savrua dahani tanai. Rabbi Yehuda svir lehu. So we'll say. So again, it sounds like these tanaim hold the Rabbi Yehuda. What Rabbi Yehuda say? The Amar besade prat letamun. That Rabbi Yehuda is the one who said that the word basada by egla rufa comes to teach us what? Anytime you see basada, basada means that the item must be visible, and if it's hidden by something else, it is exempt from whatever it is, whether it's egla arufa, whether it's shichacha. My love, Bahakamiflagi, are they not arguing about the following point? Demar Savramin Bamino Havitamun. So one opinion holds that about two like items, still the upper one is able to obscure the bottom one, and the bottom one is considered to be hidden. Umar Savalo Havitamun. And the other opinion holds that no, when you have two like items, so the bottom item is not considered to be hidden and obscured. To which the Gemara says, "Lo, that is not the case." If the Chodek Rabbi Yehuda, the Chuli Alma Min Bemino Havi Tamun, everyone will agree that what? That even two like items, the upper item obscures the bottom one, and therefore the bottom one is considered to be Tamun, considered to be hidden. And I will say here they are arguing about the Machlokes of the Rabbanon. How so? The Gemara says, "Rabbanon, the Rabbanon, for Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbanon ultimately again." Whole like the Rabbanon, namely that even something that is hidden is subject to the laws of Shechacha, and Rabbi Yehuda holds like Rabbi Shimon holds like Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that Tamun is not subject to the laws of Shechacha. If that's the case, then why do you have to set this up as a situation where ultimately one sheaf is laying on top of the other? Afilu ba'afar b'tzrar nami. So we'll say, in other words, we say it differently. Why do you have to set this up as a case of where the bottom sheaf is underneath another sheaf? If all you're looking to do is to figure out a case of tamun, figure out a case of where the item is hidden, set it up as a case of where the sheaf itself is obscured or is covered by dirt or by pebbles. Why does it have to be that it's covered by another sheaf? To which the Gemara says, "Einachinami, that is true." And I will say it's coming to teach us the position of Rabbi Yehuda, who not only holds by tamun but what Rabosai, but holds that even like items could obscure one another. That even if the upper item is the same thing as the lower item, the bottom item is still considered to be tamun, is still considered ultimately to be hidden. Tan Rabbanan. So the rabbis taught Nebraisa Chalos. So we'll say, so just so you should know, we're going to go back now to Egla Rufa for just a moment. But Halacha Lamaisa, we paskin like the Chachamim, namely that Shechacha is, or I should say, grain is subject to Shechacha, even if it's Tamun. Even if Lamaisa, you have something hidden in the ground, right? Let's say, again, you have a sheaf that is obscured. Whether it's obscured by another sheaf or it's obscured by something else, we paskin Halacha Lamaisa that it is still subject to the laws of Shechacha. Fine. Ten Rabbanim, rabbis taught. Chalal v'lo Chanuk. Chalo v'lo mefarfer. So we'll say, the pasuk says, by egla rufa chalo. So what does chalo mean? Chalo means someone who is killed by a metal object, and not someone who is chanuk, not someone who is strangled. So for example, if you don't see the fact that someone was killed by a metal object, then lemaisa, again, Rashi says over here, chalol, lo mikri ela b'kli barzel ke'in cherev. So unless someone died from something like a sword, they're not subject to laws of egla arufa. So if somebody was strangled, not subject to laws of egla arufa. Chalol v'lo mefarfer. Similarly again, they're only subject to laws of egla arufa if you find the body when the person is already dead. But if you only find the body, mefarfer avosai means like in the throes of death. Like the person is writhing, the death rattle. So that is also not subject to egla rufa. Bad dama. What does bad dama mean? Below tamun. This means that it's not you see the body below tamun begal, and it's not hidden ultimately in a pile of rubble. No fell below tali bilin. You find it fallen on the ground and not hanging from a tree. Bas soda. You find it in the field below tsaf al pnei amayim, and not floating on the water. Rabbi Elazar Amar Bekulon im haya chalal orphan. Rabbi Elazar says no. The most important thing is as long as this corpse was killed killed by a metal object, even if it's hanging from a tree, floating on the water, you still do egla rufa. Tanya, I'm Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Rabbi Lazar, Yatam Odeshim Hayachanok Mutaba Ashba, Shein Orphan. So they said to Rabbi Lazar, do you not agree that if you found the body strangled, Mutaba Ashba means literally in the garbage dump. In other words, it's on the ground, but it's strangled, that there's no egla rufa. Alma Chala Velo Chanok. Because you darshan again that the word Chala means dafka, someone killed by a metal object, and not someone strangled. So the Gemara says, I don't say that if that's the case, Hachanai Ba Adam Velo Tamun, Begal, Nofa Velo Tali Beelan, Basadalo Tafa Peyamayim. So both say, if at the end of the day, they're saying to Rabbi Lazar, if you go ahead and you make the drush of chalol v'lo chanuk, why don't you make all the other drushes as well? To which the Gemara says, Rabbi Lazar, chalol yisera ksiv. Rabbi Lazar, on the other hand, again, he darshans, there is an additional word, chalol, and that additional word, Rabbi Lazar, teaches us that what? Teaches us that lemaisa, again, teaches us that even if you find the body, as long as the body is killed by a metal object, whether you find it floating in the water, hanging from the tree, doesn't make any difference. So fundamental, you will still do egla rufa. Fundamental malchokas. So we'll say we paskin like the Tanakhama in the Mishnah, namely that in order to be subject to laws of egla rufa, A, a person must have been killed by a metal object, and B, it has to be found ba'adama. Ba'adama means that the body is visible. Ba'adama means that it's lying on the ground, not hanging from the tree, not floating on the body of water. If you find the body in any of these other states, there is no egla arufa process. Weiter. So the Gemara says, Nimtza samach l'sapar the ishru of the kochavim. If you find the body near the border of Eretz Yisrael, or next to a city that has a majority Gentile population, there is no egla arufa process. Why? Dichsiv. Ki matze prat lematzui. So we'll say, the lashon of ki matze means you find something out of the norm. But apparently, again, there are much higher murder rates by the borders of Eretz Yisrael and by cities that had large Gentile populations. So cities where this was a more regular occurrence, halacha lemaisa, again, the laws of egla arufa do not apply. Only ir she'in ba beizdin, or to a city that doesn't have a beizdin, also not subject to egla arufa. Deba'ina zikne ha'ir v'leka, because you require the elders of the city to come out, right? The elders of the close city to come out. If there are no elders, therefore the city is not subject to laws of egla arufa. Ve'ein modedin el ha'ir, you only measure to a city that has a beizdin. Pshita, we just learned this. Keva, the title of the Yerushalayim Ba'ezdin, Ani Yadan De Modedin, Ela Le'Yerushish Ba'ezdin. So we'll say, this seems to be repetitive, because you just said before that if a city doesn't have a Ba'ezdin, you don't go ahead and you don't measure the body in proximity to it. And then the Mishnah says, and you only measure to a city that has a Beis Din. We just said that before. So the Gemara says, Hakamash Malan Kidisanyo, Minayin Shim Nimsa Samach Le'ir She'in Ba Beis Din, Shemanichin Osa, Umodidin Le'ir She'ish Ba Beis Din, Tamud Lomar Belachu Zikni Ha'ir Ha'hi Mikomakum. So Rabbi says, very interesting halacha. What is the Mishnah teaching me? Rabbi says, let's say I find the body in between two cities, but the closest city itself doesn't have a Beis Din, that city is not part of the measurements. Rather, I measure to the closest city that's what? That has a Beis Din, even though there may be actual closer cities than that one. The idea is that a city without a Beis Din, so to speak, is not included in the measurements of Egla Rufa. That's the Mishnah's teaching me. Says the Mishnah, Nimtza Mechuvin Min Shtei Ayaros, Shtei Mevios, Shtei Agalos, Tiv Rebbe Lozer. So let's say you find the body exactly between two cities. Exactly between two cities. So Rabbi Eliezer says that they both bring an Egla Arufa. Ve'en Yerushalayim Mevi Egla Arufa. But you will say, if let's say you find the corpse in proximity to Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim is the closest city. Yerushalayim does not bring an Egla Arufa. Nimsa Rosha B'makom Echer V'guf B'makom Acher. Let's say you find the person's head in one place and his body somewhere else. So now you understand the kasha over here. Where do you measure from? Molichin Arosh Eitzal Guf Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says, we bring the head to the body. Wherever the body is, that's the primary place. We bring the head to the body, measure from there. Rabbi Kiva Omer HaGuf Eitzal Arosh. Rabbi Kiva says, no, we bring the body to the head and measure from the head. Me'ayin Hayumodin Nabos. And now here's a fundamental question the Gemara asks. The Mishnah asks, where on the body do you begin to measure from? Where in the body do you begin to measure from? Rabbi Eliezer Mitiburo, you measure from the navel, from the stomach of the individual, of the corpse. Rabbi Akiva Orme Chotmo, from his nose, from his nostrils. Rabbi Eliezer Ben Yaakov Orme Mokom Shenase Chala Mitzavaro. We measure from the place where he was killed, which was the neck. Says the Gemara, my time is Rabbi Eliezer. So what's Rabbi Eliezer's logic? Let's just go a little bit weiter. What's Rabbi Eliezer's logic? Namely, that lemaisa again, you go ahead and you can have two cities bringing egla rufa. So first of all, he says kasavra efshal etzamtzim. He says you could be exact. Those are both say this is a fundamental machlokus in metzias. You have many opinions that say efshal etzamtzim means it is impossible for a body to be exactly equidistant to two cities. Impossible for such precision. Rabbi Eliezer holds it is possible to have such precision like that. So that's number one. Number two, he says that even though the Torah says krova, the closest city, but the Torah also makes provisions, afilu krovos. Even if the cities that are close, even if there are two cities in exactly the same close proximity, they will both bring an egla rufa. All right, so we'll stop over here for today. Okay. Awesome. All right, I'm sorry, I know we went a little bit quickly, but all right, one of these days we will catch. Before we finish the Masechta, we'll be caught off in Mirat Hashem. Yeah, Mirat Hashem. Correct, the border of the city. That is correct.